The case is called Edwin Hardiman versus Monsanto, which sounds something like David versus Goliath. Hardiman is a 70-year-old man who says using Roundup, Monsanto's weed killer, for nearly 30 years caused his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And Monsanto is, well, Monsanto. Recently acquired by German drug and crop chemicals company Bayer for some $63 billion, the corporate behemoth commands more than a quarter of the combined world market for seeds and pesticides, with a famously active PR machine. And yet, Goliath lost. The jury in U.S. District Court in San Francisco returned the necessary unanimous decision, finding that Roundup caused or was a substantial factor in causing Hardiman's cancer, and that Monsanto should be held liable because the herbicide is not labeled to warn of that risk. The company, naturally, is appealing, but with more than 11,000 other cases in the wings, this story isn't going away anytime soon. Our next guest has been following this case and others. A longtime food and agriculture journalist at Reuters, Carrie Gillum is now research director at U.S. Right to Know and author of the book Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, out from Island Press. She joins us now by phone from Kansas. Welcome back to Counterspin, Carrie Gillum.
Thanks for having me.
Well, listeners may remember the case last year in which a California jury found that the use of Roundup by a school groundskeeper, Dwayne Lee Johnson, was a substantial factor in his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But that ruling didn't make this one a sure thing or even an expected thing. I'm noticing that some coverage seems to be taking a line that, as a former federal prosecutor was quoted on one news show, that the verdict, quote, proves that juries are being convinced that Roundup is causing cancer, close quote. Another headline was, a man said he got cancer after spraying Monsanto's weed killer. A jury agreed. It makes it sound as though these court decisions are mainly the result of fancy lawyering or maybe even deception. But Hardiman's attorneys presented scientific data, you know, just as Monsanto did. It wasn't based on sympathy mongering or something, right?
Right. I mean, of course, it is Bayer and Monsanto's argument or position that the science is on their side, that the weight of scientific evidence shows no cancer risk, no carcinogenicity connection to its glyphosate-based herbicides like Roundup. But, you know, the evidence tells us otherwise. And, of course, I've written a whole book about it and talked about it many times. The weight of scientific evidence, published peer-reviewed epidemiology, toxicology, mystic data done over multiple years, multiple countries, does indeed show a cancer risk associated with these herbicides with clear association to non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And that's what caused the International Agency for Research on Cancer in 2015 to classify glyphosate, the main ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup, as a probable human carcinogen. So there's a great deal of scientific evidence, and that's what is convincing juries. But the second leg of this, or the second part of it, is there's also a great deal of evidence of Monsanto's manipulation of the scientific record. So when Monsanto says it has all of the science on its side, well, a lot we know now from internal Monsanto documents, but a lot of that science they point to is science that they paid for, that they wrote, that they ghostwrote, that they manipulated, that they essentially had a hand in creating, you know, a safety narrative that really was not true.
It's interesting because I think that was why some folks were surprised by the ruling in Hardiman, because the judge, Vincent Chabria, had taken a lot of issue, hadn't he, with Hardiman's attorney's presentation of the case. And what he seemed to take particular issue with was lead attorney Amy Wagstaff's effort to introduce evidence of just that, of Monsanto's effort to manipulate regulators, including ghostwriting safety reviews. And I'm not sure legally whether that's permissible, but it sure sounds relevant to me as a layperson if the company is then going to rely on that data from those regulators.
Right. Well, what Chabria did, and this is the federal judge, the Johnson case was in state court, but what he did was really unusual. He threw Monsanto a bone. Monsanto said, you know what, let's just let the jurors hear only about the scientific evidence. And so the judge divided it, the case, into two phases. And the first phase was sharply limited to only discussion and presentation of scientific studies to the jurors. And Monsanto thought that they would win that. If the jurors couldn't know about their ghostwriting and manipulation, they thought that they could win. But in fact, they did not. The jurors in that first phase said, after looking at all of the scientific evidence, that the weight of evidence was on the plaintiff's side. And they found that, yes, it did cause his cancer. Then the second phase of the trial was when they considered damages, and that was when they looked at the manipulation of science and came back with this $80 million verdict.
Well, let me just keep you on regulators for a second, because, and when you're reading press accounts, you see this, Bayer, Monsanto flatly deny that glyphosate-based herbicides are carcinogenic, and they cite the Environmental Protection Agency. So in media stories, you get a kind of disagreements between institutions, between World Health Organization, EPA, and different groups. What are we to make of the disagreements between various regulatory entities on this?
Well, there are a couple of different elements to that. So number one is that most of the regulatory agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, only require a large body of evidence about the active ingredient. So in the case of Monsanto's products, the active ingredient is glyphosate. It is not the only ingredient, but it is the active ingredient. So their studies that they were required to present to EPA were limited to glyphosate. Now, the products on the store shelves are not glyphosate only. They include surfactants. And scientists around the world who have studied the actual formulated products have said that the way that these surfactants interact with glyphosate make it much more toxic than glyphosate by itself. And Monsanto admits it has never done any long-term studies about these formulated products. And the EPA admits it has never required any long-term studies. So the actual products that we're being exposed to and that are being used out there and that these plants are being used have never had any long-term regulatory requirements for carcinogenicity studies. And that is shocking to a lot of people, but that is the fact. So that's one element. The other element is, again, the regulators rely primarily on data and information that's given to them by the companies that sell the chemicals. And we know from analysis that's been done that studies that are done by companies that profit from those products generally find those products to be safe, whereas independent analysis and independent research is more likely to find risk if risk is there. You have to take that into account when they point to the EPA as, the all-knowing being that we should rely on.
Right. So it's about carcinogenicity. It's also about the right to know. I mean, capitalists talk a good game about choice, but what is choice without information, you know? And the failure to warn, I've heard, is very important in these cases. But I have to say, I still wonder how much, say, a farm worker, for example, really has, even if there's a label on the product, you know, and given the ubiquity of these chemicals in our food. I certainly think the failure to warn is critical, but I wonder if there are some things that a label doesn't cover, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The failure to warn is a big issue. Now, for the users of this who are exposed occupationally, you know, a warning is a big deal, because if you're told, hey, this could cause cancer, or, you know, this is particularly dangerous, you want to make sure that you don't get it on your skin and you don't inhale it and you wear gloves and long pants and you know, and a mask, and you know, that's going to provide a degree of protection. And they didn't do that with this product. They said it's safe as table salt, safe enough to drink. People are out there in sandals spraying it. You know, Mr. Hardiman was spraying a backpack sprayer around with no protective gear. You know, so that's a deception. When it's in the food, you're not voluntarily consuming food with pesticide residues in them, or maybe you are, but most people don't think about that.
Right.
That's a different animal. But again, if this had been classified differently by our EPA, it would not be allowed to be sprayed directly onto food crops. We wouldn't have the types of residues that we're having in food if it had been set differently by the EPA.
And then I would just note that I know that some of the work is around not just farm workers, but farm workers' children, who, of course, have a different levels of susceptibility from damage from this. So you really have to look at who all is coming in contact with it, and it's not just necessarily the person spraying it.
Gosh, no. I mean, right, there have been studies where they find this in the urine of farm workers' children, even though the children are not out there working in the fields. And our government scientists have found that this chemical, because it's so widely used, you know, it's in air samples. You see residues, traces of it in rainfall, even it's in the soil. You know, it's pretty ubiquitous, particularly in farm country.
Well, in the end, Vince Chhabria had some strong, or in the middle, I guess, he actually had some very strong language in which he said, quote, there is strong evidence from which a jury could conclude that Monsanto does not particularly care whether its product is in fact giving people cancer, focusing instead on manipulating public opinion and undermining anyone who raises genuine and legitimate concerns about the issue, close quote. That is some pretty strong language. And I have to say, I read it as a heads up to the press as well.
Exactly. And he also did say in that same ruling that there are large swaths of evidence, scientific evidence, showing that this product could be considered carcinogenic, and that Monsanto has been trying to ignore those large swaths of evidence. So it's not just the manipulation, it is also the scientific evidence that's brought these juries twice now to these multi-million dollar verdicts.
Well, media coverage has taken some familiar turns talking about the loss for Monsanto and Bayer, you know, as though they were the harmed party here. But then also, I think just framing stories around lawsuits and trials affects how we hear them, you know. So when you hear about how Dwayne Johnson was awarded $280 million in damages and that was later reduced to about $80 million and $80 million in Hardeman, you have to remember that Monsanto has almost endlessly deep pockets and, you know, money doesn't cure cancer, you know. So just speaking of it in terms of, they won, doesn't really give you an accurate picture of what's happening here, I don't think.
Definitely. And I spoke with the plaintiff attorneys, Amy Wagstaff and Jennifer Moore, yesterday, and we talked about that. You know, it's great to say we won and there's money and this cancer victim will get a few dollars. But it really is a larger picture and a larger problem in this world where we're allowing these companies, a handful of very powerful companies, to really dominate the regulatory system, the political system, food policy matters, agricultural policy, in which we all are just exposed to pesticides and chemicals that can do harm to our health. And analysts are expecting that a global settlement from Bayer to put an end to all of this litigation might be between $2 to $5 billion. $2 to $5 billion is not going to cripple Bayer, Monsanto's new owner. So if people really want to see change and we really want to have accurate information and to be informed, you know, reporters and others need to start paying attention to the big picture here and what's happening to our environment, to our health, you know, and how this company and these revelations in these jury trials of what they mean, what they really mean. And that's what I think is so important about these trials, is not who wins or who loses or how much money. I think what's important is that it puts a spotlight on a really important public policy issue and brings to light a lot of secret information, you know, internal Monsanto documents and regulatory documents and scientific studies that the general public has not heard about. You know, 40 years of information that's finally coming to light in these jury trials.
We've been speaking with Carrie Gillum, Research Director at U.S. Right to Know. You can find their work on this and other issues online at usrtk.org. The book is Whitewash, the Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, and it's out now from Island Press. Carrie Gillum, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you for having me.